service. Intelligence leaders often dismiss the need for public outreach or education. Political leaders generally reinforce this attitude, not wanting any expert views divergent from their own surfacing in the public domain. In fact, politicians want to protect intelligence for their own use, even among themselves. This necessary secrecy, particularly of sources and methods, all too often prevents a deeper public understanding of intelligence. Dr. Sims and I debated this paradox during and after her course. We also discussed the ethics of intelligence. I introduced her to Burton Gerber, a good friend, retired CIA spymaster, and devout Catholic. He visited Dr. Sims's class and lectured on the ethics of espionage. This sparked important debate. Dr. Sims and I agreed that the study of intelligence was immature. We needed more reference points, more resources, greater focus, and more dynamic, respectful, well-informed discussion. I encouraged her to organize and edit a text on intelligence, something she had been considering. She convinced Burton to be co-editor. I agreed to contribute a couple of chapters in the book. They became Intelligence and War, Afghanistan 2001-2002, and Homeland Intelligence and Security in Transforming U.S. Intelligence, published by Georgetown University Press in 2005. It serves as a useful text for those interested in the academic study of intelligence, an important but relatively small audience. I was proud of my modest contribution. After my academic sabbatical, I returned to the clandestine service in 2003 for a 2-year stint as Chief of the National Resources, NR, Division, one of the most sensitive components of the CIA. NR Division has offices scattered throughout the United States. NR works with U.S. law enforcement and U.S. citizens and institutions, public and private, to advance the mission of the clandestine service. I gained a new understanding of my country and the depth of goodwill toward the CIA. I also realized, firsthand, the centrality of the private sector in our national security. As chief of NR, I saw the advent of U.S. technologies and the growing globalization of profit and loss. The access and understanding of U.S. private sector executives and experts working in all corners of the world impressed me. The public-private interdependence in intelligence stunned me, as did the wealth of intelligence and the potential that we do not harness. Our limitations seemed to rest, in part, on the lack of responsible public study and dialogue about intelligence, particularly the role of intelligence in the shifting nature of risk. There indeed were voices, but often of the uninformed, politically motivated, or bitter espionage veterans facing a new world that did not conform to their ideological views or career expectations. As a clandestine service officer, I knew that was not my responsibility. I was proscribed from any such public advocacy role. Besides, I had already stretched the limits of the CIA's cultural norms by writing a couple of chapters in an academic text. In 2005, circumstances propelled me into a public role, one that I had not anticipated. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice asked that I serve as the coordinator for counterterrorism with the rank of ambassador at large. This was a presidential appointment and required public Senate confirmation. I accepted the offer, realizing that my life as a spy was over. I leaped from the closed, secret world of the clandestine service to the stage of global public diplomacy as the president's and secretary's representative for counterterrorism policy. I began a new life and went from spy to diplomat, from clandestine operations to international TV interviews, from a mix of aliases to an honorable title. Most of all, I shifted from intelligence collector to intelligence consumer, from an operations officer to an advisor, maker, and implementer of policy. When President Bush first saw me at the Department of State, he asked Secretary Rice, "The throat slitter as a diplomat? Is that working?" I had worked in counterterrorism across many different agencies and departments, and I understood the interagency process, so the transition from operations to policy was not difficult. My many years steeped in global counterterrorist operations and my cooperative relationships in many countries also helped. During the 18 months working for Secretary Rice, I spent most of my time traveling abroad, working with our ambassadors, military commanders, and foreign partners. In this transition, there may have been some missteps, but I endeavored to learn and improve. There was one major gap in my experience and understanding, however. I vastly underestimated the extent and the importance of the public part of this mission. I conducted more than 100 interviews and other press events worldwide. Audiences, foreign and domestic, seemed eager for somebody to engage, to discuss counterterrorism policy and the supporting role of intelligence. If nothing else, they wanted a senior U.S. official to listen. During this assignment, I was struck by the importance of education and responsible public discussion. I worked diligently to represent my country in these open forums, communicating with public audiences from Bogota to Berlin to Beirut. After I retired from U.S. government service in 2007, with the support of my wife of many years, I shifted to the private sector to pay for our children's college tuition. I also wanted greater flexibility to enjoy my family and friends. That hit home when I realized that I was spending more time thinking about the enemy than anybody else. After 26 years of government service, retirement was the right choice. In my heart, however, I will always hold dear my service as a CIA operations officer. My service was more than a career. It was indeed a great mission, a way of life. And with that honor and privilege of service, that love for my country, comes responsibility. Given my unique experiences in counterterrorism, academia, NR, public diplomacy, and now the private sector, I feel a compelling responsibility to educate, especially given the monumental shifts in geopolitical conflict and the associated demands on the intelligence mission and intelligence professionals. The paradox remains. How does a former CIA officer maintain the cultural code of the quiet professional and at the same time seek to inform the public, to advance understanding and thereby support for the intelligence mission? I seek to strike the right balance between a retired spy's honorable discretion and an active citizen's public responsibility. When I retired, I did not intend to write a book, but literary agents Andrew Wiley and Scott Moyers were persuasive, as were others. Scott first read about me in the print media. He then did some research. This included a call to a mutual friend, Bill Harlow, who vouched for me. Harlow had served admirably as the CIA's public affairs officer under Director George Tenet. Scott and Andrew invited me to their New York office, where they convinced me that I could and should share more of my knowledge. Relying on recall and updated discussions with some of the other participants, I have written personal stories to convey an understanding of the deeper issues related to intelligence, war, and policy. The stories, based on my direct participation or those of officers under my command at the time, are also important because they are about people. Intelligence, of course, is ultimately about people, those who engage in espionage and covert action, those who analyze intelligence, and those who use intelligence. Intelligence is also about those who are recruitment targets and foreign agents, and those who benefit from or suffer the consequences of intelligence operations and intelligence-informed policy, good and bad. The first section of the book deals with the fundamentals of the business. Intelligence collection, in which I served for 24 years, receives the most attention primarily because that is what I know best. Covert action, the most controversial aspect of intelligence, warrants extra treatment. The most important covert action of my career, the Afghanistan campaign of 2001-2002, serves as the primary example. There are several reasons. First, I played a leadership role and can write about these operations with authority. Second, this conflict served as an excellent case study of intelligence integrated into covert action, war, and policy. That campaign is a window into the future, a complex blend of non-state actors as enemies and allies and something in between. Third, because of Bob Woodward and others, there is an unprecedented amount of open-source information that allows me to discuss topics that would otherwise be off-limits. Fourth, the characters played dramatic, compelling roles. Fifth,